I'm Johnny Mack with your daily comedy news. A United Airlines passenger wore a red thong on his face to protest mask requirements. He compared himself to Rosa Parks. Trevor Noah said, "Rosa Parks, don't be so modest. You're more than Rosa Parks. If anything, you're the Martin Luther King of white dudes comparing themselves to black heroes for no reason." And by the way, can we all agree there's no way this dude just started sniffing thongs during the pandemic? I bet you he's been going around for years like, "Looks like I got kicked out of the dorm because I'm once again the Rosa Parks of my sister's friend's underwear drawer." Jimmy Fallon had some jokes about the CDC. We'll talk more about that in a second. But the jokes, the CDC has cut their recommended isolation time in half. Now it says he only needs a quarantine for 5 days. Yeah, a lot of COVID regulations keep changing the longer the pandemic goes on. For example, back then, doctors said to cough directly in your elbow. Now doctors say, just have fun out there, Seth. The CDC added that today's basically over, so it's really 4 days. Plus, Sundays don't count, so 3 days. You know what? Just take the weekend. Colbert. They also said you can swim right after you eat. Breaking a mirror only gives you 4 years bad luck, and stepping on a crack won't break your mother's back. Her back will just be very disappointed. Fallon, then the CDC said to avoid large indoor gatherings. Now the CDC says parties are fine as long as you set up a smaller tested positive table. Also, back then, you had to wash your hands for as long as it takes to sing Happy Birthday twice, but now you can sing it at the speed Applebee's employees do when you can tell that they're not really into it. Fallon, finally, back then, they said to avoid misinformation by staying off the internet, but now the internet is where you live, so it's your home. Marjorie Taylor Greene got kicked off Twitter, and she's been talking about a national divorce. Seth Meyers asked, "How would a national divorce even work? Who would get the White House? Who would pay alimony? Who would get custody of Eric? It would probably just be the two sides pushing him back and forth. He's a Republican, so he should go with you. But he's a New Yorker, so he should go with you." Colbert said, "Now to spread the word about Jewish space lasers, she'll have to use Mormon carrier pigeons." Corden, "They only banned her personal account, not her congressional account, which is also known as her Crazy Lights account. On the bright side, she's still a full-fledged member of the United States Congress." Jimmy Fallon revealed that he tested positive for COVID-19 over the holiday break. He was on Instagram. He shared a photo of himself in an isolation room and wrote, "Hey guys, on the first day of our holiday break, I tested positive for COVID. I was vaccinated and boosted, which made me lucky enough to only have mild symptoms." He thanked the medical professionals who worked so hard around the clock to get everyone vaxxed. This gets me wondering, what would they do? I don't think the Tonight Show has had a guest host during the Jimmy Fallon era, and I don't think during Jay Leno's time they had one either. Would they just go into reruns for a week? Would somebody else host? Same question for the other late night shows. I know here in the basement, I mentioned right before the holiday, I recorded some extra episodes just in case. Knock on wood, I've been feeling healthy and I want to stay that way. But if you hear me talking about Happy Days one day or Mitch Hedberg, and I got my answer. This really just happened. It's 1:49 on Tuesday afternoon. I had just finished editing the show, was uploading it, took out my phone to kill some time while the file crunched, and I see this headline from the New York Times: Seth Meyers tests positive for the virus and cancels this week's late night show. So here's your answer, Johnny Mac. In a tweet posted Tuesday, Seth Meyers wrote, "The bad news is I tested positive for COVID. Thanks, 2022. The good news is I feel fine. Thanks, vaccines and booster." He indicated that late night would return in a remote format next week. This week, reruns. There's my answer. Hope you feel better, Seth. Anyway, a clip from the New Year's Eve episode of the Joe Rogan Experience was removed from YouTube. This from the New York Daily News. They say that episode included a conversation with Dr. Robert Malone. During the podcast in question, Dr. Malone likened vaccine policies in the U.S. to the rise of fascism in 1930s Germany. The YouTube link to the show that is no longer on YouTube says this video has been removed for violating YouTube's community guidelines. Space Force with Steve Carell, the disappointing sitcom on Netflix, will return February 18th. Ari Spears jumped into Chappelle Gate. Remember Patton Oswalt took a picture with his friend and it was a big kerfuffle? Ari says, "It's a shame we live at a time where Patton felt the need to say sorry for hanging with a friend, especially one as accomplished as Dave." Michael Che weighed in as well and said, "Celebrities love their fans way too much." Tom Segura's father passed away right before New Year's. Tom said his father thought that people have an obligation to do things for their communities, especially people who have the ability to do so. The Daily Beast has a lengthy interview with Jim Gaffigan that I highly recommend. I will share it on the Facebook group, Daily Comedy News Facebook group. Jim was talking about the night he kind of went after Trump, saying, "People think I was drunk, and some of these right-wing sites characterize me as going on a tirade. What went down was, I'd always done jokes here and there about Trump. I remember when he was debating Hillary, I had tweets about wondering what Trump's speech would sound like in Russian, and there's been blowback from minor groups of people on the Trump train. But I was watching the Republican convention, and of course politicians are always lying and trying to convince people, but what bothered me was there was a nun, this former Notre Dame football coach Lou Holtz, who was in his 80s, and I used to have this tweet that said, if you're letting an actor tell you who to vote for, you shouldn't vote, but I was annoyed and confounded by the amount of lying that was coming from the Republican convention, which was essentially the Trump family. Right before I started tweeting, I thought, you know what? I'm going to treat myself here. Some of it had also been influenced by how I'd been sitting at home with my family for a while. George Floyd had happened. The pandemic had happened. It was so cut and dry to me, I didn't want somebody to convince that the cities are on fire and all of these lies about people trying to seek social justice for an African-American who was killed. I don't want people of my background, just being a moderate essentially, to be steered into voting for Trump. So I was just like, I'm going to come out and say exactly what I think of him. I didn't think it would influence anybody necessarily, but I also wasn't sure if Biden was going to win. And I do believe if Trump had won, it would have been really bad. And I wanted my kids who I was home with to know that I had stated my case. I didn't want them thinking, well, kids, I do a lot of shows in red states and don't want to hurt my ticket sales. What's the point in trying to communicate to your children to stand up for things if you can't do it yourself? I didn't do any press whatsoever because I didn't want it to look like I had an ulterior motive, because I didn't. Selfishly, I did it so that my older children, who were paying attention to this stuff, could have the conversation with me about it and that it could make some impact. It got pretty weird for about, I would say, a month. I lost some virtual corporate work, which was kind of like, who gives a hoot? But when you're not making any money, it's kind of like, oops. The Beast asked him to name the corporations, and he said, no, it was like three of them. And in their defense, they were just trying to provide some entertainment, and they're probably terrified of the Trumpers too. But there was a lot of blocking that occurred and a lot of people that were nasty. The weird thing is, now that we have this time away from it, it doesn't seem like it's affected my followers on any platform or affected my touring. Was Jim worried that people would confront him at the shows or maybe buy tickets to protest him? Jim said, granted, I wasn't going out after shows and it entered my mind. Are people going to buy a ticket just to heckle me? I don't think so. A lot of people who sent messages like, I was a big fan, but I'm not going to your shows anymore. I think they were lying. Like, you weren't going to my shows in the first place. I think it's people who are just angry as a defense mechanism. And nobody said anything to me in person. But as far as all those people who are like, I liked you until you got political, it's like, no, you liked me until I said something you disagreed with. It's not about politics. It's about how you're on that side. Great read, Daily Beast, Jim Gaffigan. I'll share it on the Facebook group, Daily Comedy News Group. The Washington Post also has an article with Fortune Feimster. They asked Fortune about the response to her special Sweet and Salty. She said the response was incredible. The byproduct of me telling my story was that it seemed like it helped people in that journey. I even had parents email me and say, I didn't know what to expect when my kid came out. I didn't necessarily handle it in the best way. I watched her special and learned some things about how to be there for them. And I had people say, I've been afraid to come out to my mom or dad, and I played them your special and I watched them watch you. When I saw that they were smiling and laughing, I felt safe to come out. I mean, that kind of thing just really blows you away. Today's Daily Comedy News is brought to you by Palace Intrigue. Kate Middleton turns 40 this weekend. Everybody's talking about Kate and how wonderful she is. If you'd like a daily recap about the royal family, Palace Intrigue, wherever you get your podcasts. Congratulations to Rob Bartlett. His podcast won the Worldwide Comedy Awards Best Comedy Podcast, edging out notables such as Daily Comedy News. So congratulations to that team over there. The Laugh Button caught up with Mel Brooks. The topic, Jerry Lewis. Mel said, Jerry liked to be super in charge of everything, including the comedy, but the comedy has to be written. It has to be made up. We were working on The Ladies' Man. He was a janitor, and episodes have to be kind of natural, and he was looking for big laughs. The kind of jokes I wrote in that movie, where he'd be cleaning butterflies under glass, and he lifted the glass, and they all flew away. It was just crazy. Jerry said, that couldn't happen. And I said, I know, that's what makes it funny. So we had fights like that about the butterfly. I wrote a joke about falling asleep in a convertible, going through a car wash, and his knee pushes a button, the top opens, and he's just drenched. He liked that. I couldn't get enough of my own stuff in because he's a pretty good comedy writer himself and wanted to be in charge of everything. And I learned when I made my own movies, get as much help as you can. You can't be in charge of everything. There's somebody has to light you. Somebody has to photograph you. Somebody has to come up with a storyline. It's collaboration. Movies are an incredibly collaborative medium, and Jerry didn't appreciate that. He'd say, no collaboration. Me, Generalissimo. Me, boss. You listen. Take notes. We had fights every day. Later, when I was making my own movies and he was making his, he realized that Mel Brooks was not just a stooge, but he was a talent in his own right. We became good pals. He kept saying one thing. Contemporaries usually have little spats about who's got the better this or that. And the one thing Jerry would come at me with was, they like you in France, but they love me in France. Vulture did that list of 22 comedians you should know. One of them, Daniel Perez. Hey, Daniel Perez, when did you feel you were funny enough to make a legitimate go at comedy? I love this answer. When I saw my BFF's roommate perform stand-up and thought, he's not funny, I'm funny, then I texted my BFF, so how do we do stand-up? Daniel Perez, what are you known for? I love this answer, too. In 2015, I won a treadmill on The Price is Right. The clip went viral because I use a wheelchair and don't have feet. I made jokes about winning the awkward prize on Twitter, and the next night, Jimmy Kimmel had me as a guest on his show. It was a very silly and surreal 48 hours, and I can't wait to be back on Kimmel someday. I'm proud of a lot, but acting with Larry David on Curb, including the season premiere, was a huge bucket list moment. If there were a 90s-style sitcom built around you and your material, what would it be? Danielle said, after her father is charged with running an elaborate Ponzi scheme and her family's fortune is seized by the feds, spoiled socialite Danielle Perez is forced to get a job at a waste management company where she learns the value of hard work, friendship, and disinfectant. For a girl with no feet, she steps in an awful lot of crap. It's called Rolling Downhill Fast, coming this fall to Fox. Best and worst comedy advice. Best. Madison Shepard told me, what is for you will be for you. Reminds me that all I can do is be my best, so worry, stress, and anxiety outside of that is not just unhelpful, but futile. Worst advice was once in the parking lot after a show. A comedian drove up to me as I was getting my car and said, I have a suggestion. Next time you should open up with Danielle. Stand up? Really? Then he drove away in his Prius. That's your comedy news for today. You can follow this show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. See you tomorrow.